that's what I have to say. Daniel has my number. Father has my number.
And John, basically, because I don't think we should make a discussion out of this right here in chapel. A couple of observations. First of all, John and I dare talk about it. I think it's a good idea. And the second thing, of course, is that somebody had better keep an eye on that house and almost, I would say, maybe even live there. And so that's the second thing. And then thirdly, I would appreciate if you people, till our next meeting now, I will be leaving Detroit this Friday, and next Wednesday I'm giving a priest retreat in Faulkner, Maryland. The following Wednesday I'll be in Rome, so that the next Wednesday that I'm free will be the 10th of June. I'm coming back, Lord willing, on the 9th of June. So I'm meeting for the next Marian Catechist Assembly, if you wish, is same time, same place here in chapel, on June the 10th, which is a Wednesday. I'd appreciate, and I mean from everybody here, some feedback. Would that be a good idea, John? And in writing, if you don't mind. Just scribble down, providing the writing is legible. Any ideas you have, no matter how, well, how wild or unrealistic they may be. And the more you write, the better. Secondly, I would appreciate if you could indicate, if I could use the word, your availability to somehow be responsible for the, you know, first of all, the property as property, and secondly, that the place not be, well, vacant during the day. That would be unwise. Now, my own superiors have offered me, though I've been, this is my fourth year here, I don't have, as you know, an office. I've been using that E room, which I call my executive suite. You know, the numbers, well, the rooms are numbered or lettered A, I think, to E. Well, I have the E room where I can put some of my things. But I've been talking to my superiors, and there is the likelihood or possibility of my getting a room in the basement. But I don't have it yet. And room is not quite the same as a house. There are many things I like to store there. On the other hand, it better be safe. And we could have a telephone there, can't ask connections, and I'm going to Rome for a number of reasons, but I want to make a report on the Ignatian Catechists in Rome, and I can just briefly tell you some of the things that are in the offing. The immediate reason we're going to Rome, we have told some of you, is the International Eucharistic Congress that is being sponsored in Seville, Spain in June of 93. Seville was where Columbus was first buried. Holy Father is hoping that the United States, of course, the rest of North and South America, will, if necessary, rediscover their Catholic faith. Rome's figures are, since 65, we've lost 14 million Catholics in North and South America who become Protestants. Their annual average is about 1 million a year. And if there's one thing that the Holy See has been telling me, it is the need for organizing lay people, and with emphasis, laymen, to do something to stop the hemorrhage. We're losing millions. And also to evangelize, even re-evangelize, our people. But the needs, as by now you must know, are immense. So, and finally, this may well be in God's providence, the beginning of the Ignatian Catechists not only being formed, as I'm trying to do, both spiritually and doctrinally, but also become involved in working concretely, specifically, in a catechetical apostolate. They will somehow come from the Holy See, because this is the only formula that I know of in the work that I'm doing for the Church. And quite frankly, if it wasn't John Miller, we'd have to have someplace, somewhere, a central, I call it such, location. And although there are Ignatian catechists in other cities, the largest contingent, both of actual and potential Ignatian catechists, is here in Detroit. And if I may suggest that maybe, perhaps, somehow, at least on occasion, the Marian catechist could also use those facilities.
Amen.
But the Ignatian catechist would be in charge. John, thank you for the offer. And now, this is an assignment. By June the 10th, or on June the 10th, and by the way, don't start writing at 7 o'clock on June the 10th. Have something written by June the 10th to give me, put into an envelope or whatever you wish. Written out, type whatever you think. And I'm not sure, John, it would be necessary for them to contact you, because I think by now you have an idea and there are so many things that need to be done. I can just tell you that in the last going on 22 years of my working for the Holy See, only the Lord knows what is even valuable at all in His eyes. But in my judgment, the most important thing I've been able to do for the Church has been organizing. We now have, for example, the Institute on Religious Life. And we have two offices now, in Chicago, another one now in Ann Arbor. And as of now, we have 154 communities belonging to that institute, where there were zero when we started, and all dedicated to the Holy Father and to the Catholic Church. And I think I should share this with you, because this is very much in place here. As some of you may know, I was told by a delegate, a representative of the Holy Father, Paul VI, to do something to get into the media. So we have an association called the Catholic Voice of America, incorporated in the state of New York, happy with the chairman of the board. But we've not been able to do much, and mainly because there was not that kind of dedicated commitment that would be needed. And Mr. Monahan, I'm confident, will offer us such facilities as he has, but we ought to have a place where the catechetics would be done not only by the spoken or written word, but also through the media. In any case, I can see all sorts of possibilities. And now, John, may I ask, you are foreseeing this like about when? Say the fall or winter or?
I'd like to do it.
Or next year?
As soon as possible. As long as necessary. If
yeah.
We have. Then go on with that. If we have some interest, or we haven't got enough interest, I would certainly pursue. If we have no interest, we have no interest.
I would say to keep us informed also Just for the record, we have a library, a Catholic library, in Manassas, Virginia, which we need because, as you know, so many good Catholic books are simply no longer available. And so one of my hopes is to also, I'm sure there'll be space for
a library.
And this too now, for example, I've been in contact with people that and are totally committed to doing this, to putting all the books in the Catholic Lifetime Reading Plan, over 5,000 titles, on computer to make them available as a national resource center. And a man who spent a lifetime in computers is in San Antonio, Texas. I knew him from the East when he lived and I was teaching at the university. And but we need a physical location. So the potential is breathtaking. Pray over this, would you all? And remember, June the 10th, a feedback from all of you. John, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Before we go on, I would like to just remind all of you that on the last day of this month, our Jesuit, Blessed Claude Colombier, is to be canonized. Now that is, may I ask?
Eternal life.
What is that?
Eternal life.
Okay. Somebody reminded me, was it you reminded me, to bring the 9 A's, remember? Now the way I describe them, I just want to do some of my homework. The 9 qualities or whatever that a wife appreciates in a husband. I might add that husbands would also appreciate this in wives. But the immediate context was what wives like to see in their husband or get from their husband. Well, I had 9, but now I have 14 A's. We just read them for my treasure. Appreciation. Secondly, affection. Thirdly, attention. Fourthly, acknowledgement. You acknowledge one's presence. Number 5, acceptance. How many marriages? 44 years in the priesthood. He has taught me a great deal. The need for knowing how to accept a person for what they are. It is remarkable how much people learn which they never dreamt before they married. Number 6, adaptation. Adapting. Number 7, approval. Number 8, assistance. I've talked to wives that told me they don't remember yet 20 years when the husband, say, has helped with, for example, the dishes. Paying all kinds of money for plumbers, electricians, but masculine hormones, but That's number 8, assistance. Number 9, assimilation. Is almost, you might say, built into the very concept of marriage, that the one, you know, becomes like the other. Number 10, assurance. We all need, call it encouragement, but assurance. Don't deep in our heart, we're all scared, all of us. And those who put on the most, you might say, brave front, are often the most afraid. So assurance. Number 11, affirmation. Which is almost a lifetime attitude of mind, is especially of mind. Number 12, agreeableness. It's not enough to be loving, kind, and so on interiorly. It should show itself externally. 13, amiability. The very word, amiability, or amiableness, being able to be loved. There's a difference between loving and being loved. Some people show their affection in strange ways and makes it difficult, well, to love them. And finally, 14, adjustment. Constant adjustment, day after day. And I would say, in one reason, that I've never spoken this way to wives. Though, I'm sure they would, husbands would expect the same thing from wives, but not quite. Because, as I've told so many people over the years, for a celibate, it's remarkable how much I know about women. Raised by a widowed mother from the age of 1 when my father died to the age of 15 when she thought I was too old to have women boarders in the house. But talk about adaptation. Adjustment. Agreeableness. Being a man, I know how well I know. And I have to say this, and especially in dealing with women, this is a list of qualities. This is not exhaustive, by the way. The very changeableness of women, in case you men don't know, and I'm speaking with women here in chapel. Men, in case you don't know, women change. And it's to the nature. The mystic Teresa of Avila, describing her own personality, that her spiritual life almost depended on the weather. The weather was nice outside, she was agreeable. When the weather was rough, she knew that other people found it hard to live with her. At any rate, I was asked to do this, so I thought I would provide such information as I can. I did mention that our Jesuit, Claude Colombier, is to be canonized on the 31st of May. I can't be there much as I'd like to, because I'm supposed to be at the national meeting of the Institute of Religious Life, which closes on the 31st. I'm to present the award, the annual award that we give each year, this time to a bishop whom I know well. So I'm to both present the award and give a lecture. So, but what I thought I'd do now, some of you already have, perhaps, Daniel, I think you've received. Would you pass these around? And if you don't mind just taking one, if you want more, let me know. It's a memo of the canonization. And also a prayer, which we can, rather, we can close tonight's meeting with together reciting that prayer on the reverse side. Then, still in connection with the Sacred Heart, because that's what Claude Colombier, as you know, did, except for him, what we now have, what the whole world, Catholic world, recognizes, devotion of the Sacred Heart. There would, of course, be devotion of the Sacred Heart. It's part of our faith. But would not be as recognized, widespread, or as effective, except for Blessed Claude. He was a confessor, as you may know, of St. Margaret Mary. Confessor and spiritual director. And it wasn't even 2 years that he was stationed in Pearly and Montreal, where she died, where the convent was. He was sent by superiors to England to be chaplain to the Duchess of York. This in the 17th century, by the time that England had already broken with the Catholic Church. And he was then chaplain to his duchess, who was a Catholic, and by royal permission she was allowed to have a Catholic chaplain. Catholic priests were not allowed, as you know, in England. In fact, if they offered Mass, they were even liable to capital punishment. At any rate, after about a year and a half as chaplain, Claude was accused of somehow proselytizing among the, by then, well, ex-Catholics that Henry VIII and his followers made sure that Catholicism was wiped out of England. So he was unjustly accused, thrown into prison, and he was in prison. He was not a strong man in prison so long that his health broke down. Instead of dying in prison, the British sent him to France, where he died not long after. And he had been beatified for some time, but not canonized until the end of May. One more miracle was needed, which was worked recently. And so he's being canonized, as I said, in Rome. And what I thought, since he is the great promoter of devotion of the Sacred Heart, I'd also distribute a copy of this. I don't think I've ever distributed this. If we have one to each of you, don't mind. This is a prayer that some of you may know years ago. I've been saying for years myself. I had it approved by the Cardinal Archbishop of Chicago. It's a prayer for the acceptance of death, which I've been saying for years, last thing at night, first thing in the morning, and it's to the Sacred Heart. So I thought I'd take this occasion before the canonization of Blessed Claude to also share that with you. Then I've got, I'm not sure I have enough, I hope I have. This is a copy of the prayer of Blessed or Now to Be Soon Saint Claude Colombier on perfect confidence in God. So, print is not too dark, but I've been saying that prayer for 50 years, and all I know is I need it. And the more trials and crosses the Lord sends us, the more we need to strengthen our confidence in God. If some of you may have a copy of that prayer, just, I hope we have enough for each one of you. Thank you. And one more. I have just about maybe 8 or 10 of these. We can get more, though. There are so many things that come my path that already may. I should have given you this back last January. These are the monthly attentions for the Apostleship of Prayer for 1992. Because one thing that I'd like to have all of you say, if you're not saying it already, is the morning offering to the Sacred Heart. So, their general intentions and mission intentions, Holy Father has a different one for each month. And again, as many as I have, you're welcome to. I can get more. I should also say that since our last meeting, where did we meet last? Was it last week? Well, I was in Spokane, Washington, and spoke at our Jesuit university. And I told them about our catechetical training, and that we're training both men and women as catechists. I spoke to about 400 people on Friday night, and over 3,000 people on Saturday. And on Friday night I spoke on homeschooling. On Saturday I spoke on the Holy Eucharist. And then got many names of people, families that just want, desperately want, could be further west than Spokane, or wherever you go, north, east, south, or west, the need, the desperate need for training, and I repeat, lay people, because, and the whole subject by itself, the Holy See is now talking about the suicide of the missions. Because given the convulsion to which the church is going, this has deeply affected and damaged the church's missions throughout the world. Vocations are not there, and often things that are being taught are not all that Catholic. I think I did mention these figures to you because they're very much to the point. That at the turn of the present century, there are less than 500,000 Catholics in the whole continent of Africa. I cited those figures to you once, didn't I? And last year's figures, 74 million Catholics in Africa. And that in spite of a militant Muslim persecution of Catholics. Militant. 24 African nations, Muslim nations, have formed a federation to wipe out Christianity from their countries. All I can tell you is, and I mean it, the Americans are living in a dream. It's a dream. And part of the reason is we've been mesmerized. We take these things for granted, as though it's part of our culture. You don't know. The enemy is wiping out the Catholic Church from America. Did you know that? And doing a very good job. You don't close 43 churches in Detroit or 62 in Chicago without a reason. And it's not economic. At any rate, these are inspiring to me. I spoke on Friday night in Spokane at 9 o'clock in the evening. Well, that's 12 o'clock Detroit. You know, I want to be very honest with you. The most fundamental duty we have, saying a lot, the most fundamental duty we have is to share our faith. Fathers of the church tell us, we will not be saved, we'll not get to heaven, unless we help others get there too. In other words, as I tell people, there is work to do. It's one of the favorite phrases of St. Francis Xavier, the patron, as you know, of the missions. I like the Latin. Da mihi animas. Give me souls. Da mihi animas. Give me souls. At any rate, for might pass on also, if anybody else comes in, might have a stockpile ready. Now, to refresh my memory, what lesson were you on last?
13, 1, 3.
What? So, lesson
13.
Lesson 13. And page?
37.
Page 37. 1, 12. Page 37. And what number?
112.
112. 12. Just bring this other gun, please. So number 112, the church grows in holiness through persecution. That is no pious cliche. The implication of that statement, momentous. If the church goes through persecution, well, that means that if I'm going to promote the church's growth, I must not only be resigned to, I must do what? And I don't have to work for persecution. What I believe before God He wants me to do, even though I foresee persecution. And all I can tell you is, especially my own blood relatives behind the Iron Curtain deal, well, let's see, a few months ago, for years had very little contact with them, but I heard about them on occasional through the clandestine means. I'd hear from them or about them suffering. And they've kept the faith. And the first thing, no matter, first of all, only professed communists could get an education. Only professed communists could own property. Think about, you know, socialism. That's in quotation marks. Those who were communists, and the more adaptable they are and willing to cooperate with the communists, the more money they had, the more food they had everything. And our problem in the States, and I have to say this, we Catholics have made so many adaptations to our pagan society. Many Catholics don't even know what a bona fide Catholic is. And so this is what this, the church grows through persecution. Now it's not a psychological relationship, but it's a doctrinal one. In other words, just as Christianity came into existence. The church is born on the cross. So the church grows through the cross. Christ can no longer suffer. But we better. You don't have to call somebody up and say, would you please call me some bad names? I assure you, the opposition, he'll provide. And, for example, three bishops, and I have to say this, three bishops openly, brazenly, approve homosexuality. And who says anything? Or Moynihan, read about this. He gave the Leitari Medal. You know, it's an annual award that the University of Notre Dame gives to an outstanding Catholic. Moynihan, straight pro-abortion. And this is where we wouldn't be in the crisis in which we are if those, let me change the word, if all of those who are to be leaders of the church really were as courageous as Holy Father keeps telling them to be. So I'm not speaking to bishops or to priests, I'm speaking to lay people. That's why we're here. 113. There have always been heresies that plague the church. True. Always? Always. And even among the apostles. We now call them dissenters. We used to call them heretics. Well, the vocabulary readjusts to the culture. Already among the apostles. Remember Thomas? He should have stayed with the other apostles. He wasn't there, remember? Easter Sunday night. And when they told him that Christ had risen, Scilabex and Ronner have nothing. Might see on Thomas the apostle. Show me. Well, thank God he repented. He might not, right? I said, I think you're a ghost. But he, whatever posture he assumed, but he said, my Lord and my God. In America, this is one reason why America is such a leader in the propagation of error. Because we're so educated. And the most dangerous people on earth are educated unbelievers. They are really dangerous. And among those, the most dangerous are those who have been believers. So there have always been heresies as there are today. And we adjust ourselves to circumstances. We use different names. But these are heresies. So, not to be surprised. In fact, to take it in stride. That's really what I'm after in these questions. Not to be, I don't say not to be shocked. Well, by now we ought to be, should have got over the shock. But the more widespread the error, and it is widespread, the more someone is needed who has the faith and knows it. And the word is knows it, understands it. 114. The whole world needs the church's teaching, even for temporal prosperity. What a statement.